This is Stephen Strang, and welcome to the Strang Report podcast. Not long ago, I interviewed Susan Perlman of Jews for Jesus, and there's just so much to talk about that I invited her into the podcast studio because I wanted her to share about some of the things that are happening around the world with Jews for Jesus. There's amazing stories. Many of them are confidential, so she's going to have to tell us in a very general way to not risk people's lives in some instances. And you're going to want to stay tuned because not very often do we get a up-to-date report on what's happening in some of these parts of the world where people are actually endangered for sharing their faith in Jesus. So stay tuned.
Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome back. And Susan Perlman of Jews for Jesus, I'm so glad that we could do another podcast. The first one, we told the story of how you came to believe in Yeshua as your Messiah. And it's a fascinating story. And we didn't really have time to talk about the work of Jews for Jesus around the world. So the first podcast is on the Charisma Podcast Network. And if you didn't listen to it, you need to look it up and listen to it. It was very good. So tell me and my listeners about some of the work. You know, a lot of people would know Jews for Jesus by name. You have a very famous brand, shall I say. People think of you as handing out leaflets in New York City, which of course you do. But really, you work in many places around the world. Why don't you bring us up to date?
There's so much actually going on right now in Jews for Jesus around the world that is exciting. And as you said, Steve, there are things that I can't talk about in a very specific way because it puts people at risk who are strong, faithful believers, but we want them to continue to be able to do what they're doing. And certainly one of the places that people are most at risk is in parts of the former Soviet Union. And we have a work in one city where there has been a lot of unrest, unfair beatings of people and taking them into prison and into jail and then releasing them. But what we've done a lot of in those situations is we've ministered to the people who've been beaten up. We have one ministry leader who told me about how a lot of family members will come to the jail when their family members have been arrested. Now, for just being forthright believers in Jesus and sharing their faith, or they're protesting unfair government practices that are going on, and we'll provide like hot drinks and just some kind of hospitality for the family members who are out there, and many times these family members are Jewish. And we have an opportunity to talk to them about the Lord in the process.
So let me get this right. It's in the former Soviet Union, which some of the countries, you know, broke off. I've been over there right when communism was kind of breaking up. And there's a very large Jewish population in Russia or the former Soviet Union. A lot of those people came to this country in the early part of the 1900s. Fiddler on the Roof was in Russia, if I recall. And there's an awful lot of American Jews, especially in New York City, are from Russia or that part of the world. Isn't that right?
Yes. I mean, that's actually where my family immigrated from back in, as you said, in the turn of the 1900s, here to escape the czarist Russian regimes that were going on.
The ones that were overturned by the communists in 1917, 1918, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
And also an awful lot of the Soviet Jews have emigrated to Israel in recent decades. And in fact, we've worked with a ministry called Ezra International that specifically helps Jewish people who want to make Aliyah in Israel. They help them with their paperwork, which is often difficult. They help them with their plane fare, or actually will charter airplanes and take them to Israel. So I'm well aware of that. But there's still a huge Jewish population, isn't there?
There is. And it's a population that is somewhat isolated in many ways today because of so many Russian and Ukrainian Jews who have left. But we have ministry to Russian Jews all over the world. We have a ministry to them in Israel. One of the things we do over there is we teach Hebrew as a second language to Russians, because we have a number of staff who are both Russian-born but grew up in Israel.
That's a great ministry.
And it's a great ministry, and we have them all over the country. There are Russian Jews that live in Germany now. You know, Germany was almost completely emptied of Jews during the Holocaust. And today, a lot of Jews have made their way back to Germany.
Which is interesting.
So we have ministry there to a lot of Russian immigrants to Germany. And then, of course, here in the United States, where a lot also came in the 80s and the 90s.
You know, we in Charisma Magazine, we've written about this over time. Sid Roth will have, you know, huge crusades and miracles. We've written about that. Jonathan Bernis also. You know, sometimes I get confused exactly where they go. I think a lot of it was to the Ukraine, which at one time was part of the Soviet Union, now its own separate country. But talk about this persecution that you're talking about. So, you know, if people are put in jail, that would be the government putting them in jail.
Exactly.
If people are just kind of beat up, you know, that could be a little bit of street violence. You know, people who are upset maybe hearing the gospel and want to show how angry they are. Exactly what's going on?
Well, you know, you have, and I don't want to mention the specific country, you've had elections recently that were, in a sense, illegal elections, and people protesting that, and then they get arrested, and they get beaten up while they're being arrested, so much to extent that some have had to go to the hospital before they're even sent to jail because they're so badly beat up. And our staff are there as the ministers. You know, there are parts of the former Soviet Union where you cannot publicly preach the gospel without it being against the law. You know, they'll get arrested. So our people are they're just so courageous, you know, to be out there sharing their faith and ministering to others who are being hurt and maligned for not just their faith, but for just standing up for simple freedoms and rights that we so take for granted sometimes here in this country.
So when people support the work of Jews for Jesus, as I do, because Joy and I have supported your ministry for a number of years. And so they're really supporting, in a way, they're supporting these things that are kind of unseen in different parts of the world, not just the former Soviet Union, but other parts of the world. Describe as much as you can how extensive the work of Jews for Jesus is. It started in this country, but I know you're in lots of countries around the world. How many?
We're in 12 countries right now.
Oh, wow.
And our ministry is different in each country, depending on the needs there. For example, our work in England, in the UK, specifically, is reaching two communities, the traditional British Jews, and then the large influx of Israeli Jews who now live in central London. So we have a ministry to both segments of the Jewish population.
Why would Israeli Jews, Sabras, go to England? I mean, it's supposed to make Aliyah go the other direction.
Well, Israelis travel everywhere. And oftentimes they do this for a period of time, for job possibilities. And then they say they're going to go back home. But they tend to just congregate among other Israelis when they go to another country. They like to continue to speak Hebrew and to be among other Jews like themselves.
Well, this is fairly typical of all kinds of immigrants when they migrate to another country. But so can you describe how you reach out to these people?
Well, we reach out in many ways. One is on social media. Because they're immigrant populations within a city, the way they reach each other is checking out on social media what other Israelis are doing, what events are happening, and we do the same. And so we're available in the same way as the others that they meet on social media.
And what kind of response do you get?
One by one, it's a pretty good response because we're there as also we have Hebrew speakers. We're not strangers to them. We're like them, and we're offering them the kind of support for their families. We have events for the children. We have a lot of just opportunity for people to have someone to talk to and listen to. We also, sometimes we'll do English lessons for non-English speakers in a country like England. But we work among Israelis in Germany as well. There's in Berlin. There's a large Israeli population that's moved there, and so we'll have Bible studies. We'll have just kind of focus group things where people can come and sit and be part of it, and it's really quite amazing, because when you're a minority within a country, and you find other people who resonate with you in terms of that background, they're open to socially spending time with you where they might not back home.
Interesting. I've followed and supported and, of course, written about Jews for Jesus for many years. In fact, when Charisma was just starting, Charisma magazine started in 1975. In 1976, we did our first article on Messianic Jews. And the cover, which I still remember, was a lady lighting, I guess you call it a Shabbat candle.
Yes.
Which is a very traditional thing. And the headline says, "Is it kosher to believe in Jesus?" And we didn't write just about Jews for Jesus, but, I had come across it as a young journalist. I'm sure I wrote the article. I guess I could look back in the archives and see. So I'm familiar with how Moshe Rosen started Jews for Jesus around 1970, really as an offshoot of the Jesus movement. And, we talked about that in the previous podcast, but it's just amazing to think, when Moshe was handing out his little pamphlets saying a message from a square and those kinds of things, who would have thought that all these years later, decades later, that the work would be in 12 countries around the world? And Jews for Jesus is just in your face. I mean, the Jewish community, a lot of them think you can't be a Jew and believe in Jesus. Somebody started something, I haven't researched this, but I'm just going from memory, that he started something called Jews for Judaism, kind of be in your face the other way. A lot of people would have thought that this would have just been a fad while the hippies were still around and would have just faded away afterwards. And of course, there's a lot of other ministries. Earlier I named just two of them that are fairly prominent. They don't approach things exactly the same as Jews for Jesus. So what has been the secret sauce that's made Jews for Jesus work all these decades?
Oh, that's a great question, Steve. I recall an interview that David Brickner, our executive director, did a number of years ago with Larry King on his Larry King Live show. And there was this debate with a rabbi. And at the very end, Larry looked out at the audience and he said, "This is not going away." And that was very prophetic because it hasn't. And the truth of the matter is, the message of Jesus for the Jewish people is not a new message. It's one that's been around since the first century. And we just have continued to adapt to whatever is the current mode of expression. And that's why Jews for Jesus, I think, still is around. Whether we were handing out gospel tracts on street corners at a time when people weren't distracted with earbuds and cell phones and so on, to being available on a live chat forum online or through live streams today. You know, we just stay current and relevant. And the message, it's an old message, but it's a message that needs to be said again and again in new ways. The focus, the basis of it is the same. You know, we're Jews who believe that Jesus is the promised Messiah of Israel and Savior of the world. But we say it differently. And we say it differently to different audiences. One of the groups that we are really working on, focusing on today, is called the Haredim. That means the ultra-Orthodox Jews. And for so long, this group has been ignored by those in the Christian world because they've been thought to be impossible to reach. So why even bother trying? Now, the ultra-Orthodox Jews, you'll recognize them. They wear the long coats and the hats and have the side curls. These are a very separatist sect of Judaism. They don't mingle with other people. They stay within their own communities. But these are people who believe the Bible. These are people who are waiting for the Messiah. And we feel that we have the message of the Messiah to bring to them.
You know, that's very interesting. And maybe as we wrap up this podcast, you could share, because I'm interested in hearing it, but also the listeners can maybe pick up a few ideas. How would you share what we call the gospel? What's the Jewish way to say the gospel? I guess the message of Yeshua, the Messiah. How would you share it? What do you say to them that would persuade them to accept Yeshua as their Messiah?
Well, I think the message that we share that I think is helpful and hopeful for Haredim, but for all Jews and all people in general, is the message of hope that we have in Messiah. You know, we have a world that is so polarized, and people are so cynical today, and there's so little people trust in. But we have something that is sure, something that people can trust in, and that's the message that Jesus came, that he loves you, that he cares for you, that he died for you, that you can have new abundant life through him. You know, I think it's an old message, but it's a message that we're not hearing enough of.
Very well said. We'll leave it there. And thank you for being on my podcast today. I'll remind my listeners to share this on social media, get the word out, and remember to pray for these people that we talked about in these countries we didn't mention. There is power in prayer. Thank you for listening to The Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Stephen Strang. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, it's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.